Well, I hate to keep bringing you reports that start out with things just got worse, but things just got worse. And over the weekend, you may have heard, well, let's back up. Friday morning, Trump announced, you know, total victory, that Iran has caved in to every demand, et cetera, et cetera. That whole thing fell apart within hours. And then by Saturday, everybody realized that Trump was just making it all up. And I've got some reports about that here coming up today as well, some reports I released over the weekend. And then, of course, just like we always predict, by, you know, Sunday night, Trump had changed himself yet again. He's talking about we're going to have to bomb them all, and we're going to bomb them back into the Stone Age, and we're going to destroy everything yet again. And in response to that, oh, and I forgot, the U.S. Navy also said that it fired upon an Iranian-flagged tanker ship using, I guess, a 50 cal gun, a deck gun, and shot out the engine of it and then boarded it. But then Iran denies that that happened, so who knows? We're not there. We don't know what's going on exactly. And, you know, the U.S. government just constantly lies about everything, as we have seen. And also with Iran, there are different groups there that have sometimes have different stories as well. So we don't know exactly what happened there. But in response to the threat that the U.S. Navy is going to start boarding Iranian vessels and taking them over, which is an act of piracy on the high seas, obviously, because they're talking about doing it globally. For example, boarding and taking over an Iranian tanker on the way to China, which I imagine China is not going to be too thrilled about that. They've already issued some warnings. But in response to all of this, Iran has said that it's going to strike in three areas, three specific areas that are going to devastate the world economy by taking 32% of global oil supply offline. Now, you may recall, and by the way, I'll go through these targets with you. We can take a look at this. You may recall that last week, we talked about how roughly about 20% of the world's oil supply is already offline right now. And that's because, you know, almost no ships are moving through the Strait of Hormuz. Now, technically, it might be more like 22%, but we're going to round it off at 20. And then we talked about old school economics versus more modern economic theory, and how in modern economics, the role of energy is better understood as being the enabler of the other inputs into the formulas that determine GDP, those inputs being labor, technology, and capital. And then if you add energy to that, energy enables those other three. So we talked about how a 20% reduction in the world's oil supply would result in at least a 10% drop in global GDP, which would be a global depression. I mean, it easily qualifies as a depression. It's much more than a recession. In fact, I called it triple COVID. You may recall that, because COVID, the 2020, saw a roughly a 3.1% reduction in global GDP, which was devastating at the time. In many ways, lots of businesses went under, lots of supply chains cratered, but that was only 3.1%. We are talking about 10% right now, a 10% reduction in global GDP, based on 20% of the oil being blocked. Okay, now remember, these are rough numbers. This isn't a science paper. But we also talked about how for every 1% drop in global GDP, anywhere from 40 to 50 million people around the world are thrust into extreme poverty. That means they face, well, famine, being homeless, not being able to afford shelter and clothing and food, etc. So if you multiply that by the 10%, then you're talking about up to, let's say, 500 million people or half a billion people being thrust into extreme poverty all around the world. Now, that was last week. This week, it's worse. Now we're talking about 32% of the global oil supply being offline. So let's cover briefly how we get there, and then we'll run those numbers. But Iran has said they're going to hit the Yanbu pipeline in Saudi Arabia. This is a pipeline that the Saudis use to bypass the Strait of Hormuz. And I think that pipeline, if memory serves me, carries about 7 million barrels per day or something maybe in that range. That's a lot. Maybe it's only 5 million, but it's still a lot. All right, so that's one thing, the Yanbu pipeline, which is exposed, you know? I mean, parts of it are underground, but not all of it. So that can be hit. And then secondly is the Fujairah facility in the UAE, United Arab Emirates, that has also been used to bypass the Strait of Hormuz. And as you'll note, Iran is not a fan of the UAE, that's for sure. So they're going to hit this facility, they promise. And then the third is going to be the complete closure of the Bab al-Mandeb Strait, which is controlled by or adjacent to Yemen. So it's controlled by the Houthis, who have already proven to be the world's most fierce fighters. I mean, they get things done. And that would block tankers from being able to access the Suez Canal. And if you can't go through the Suez Canal, well then, you have a very long, arduous journey all the way around the southern tip of Africa. And that adds weeks and many, many millions of dollars, if not tens of millions of dollars, to the transportation costs. And it stretches out the tankers that we do have, meaning there won't be enough tankers for the world's supply, etc. And that's assuming you can even get anything out of the Strait of Hormuz, which you can't. So, Iran promises to take us, in summary, from a 20% reduction to a 32% reduction of global oil. Now remember that, I mean, that's almost 33%, so we can call it one third of the global oil supply. But 32%, using our economic models that we talked about last week, the more modern economic models of energy and technology, labor, and capital, this would result in, as you have guessed, a minimum of a 16% collapse or contraction of global GDP. 16%. So now we're getting beyond just depression. Now we're getting into collapse territory. We're getting into a territory that is devastating for the world, for modern civilization. 16% contraction in global GDP because roughly one third of the energy supply is not available. So, using math on this, right, we can decide that somewhere maybe between 700 million and maybe 800 million on the high end, human beings will be thrust into extreme poverty, mass starvation of something approaching a billion people. Not quite a billion, but then again, some of these numbers are low. These estimates are low. So a 16% reduction in global GDP might be the more, might be the best case scenario. A worst case scenario would be more like, you know, 24% reduction in global GDP. And now we're talking about over 1 billion people thrust into extreme poverty, mass famine, and starvation. Got it? So that's what Iran now promises to do in retaliation to the escalation path that has been chosen by Donald Trump, who over the weekend tweeted out what a great ally Israel is and how loyal he is to Israel and how awesome Israel is. He didn't mention, you know, genocide or mass murder, raping prisoners or anything like that, because even though that's what Israel does, Israel's clearly the most evil genocidal nation on this planet at the moment. But Trump loves them. What does that tell you about Trump? But he's all in with Israel, so he is going to continue to escalate this, which means he's not choosing to take any kind of exit ramp out of this situation. Now, for Iran's side of things, Iran is fighting for its existence and its relevancy to the future of human civilization. Iran, if it does not assert its power over controlling the Strait of Hormuz at this moment in history, then Iran will be defeated and will become irrelevant. For example, if Iran just returns to the strait being completely open and free and anybody can come and go, then Iran is just inviting itself to be forever bombed by the U.S. and Israel with no ability, no leverage to negotiate with or to try to defend itself with. So Iran is playing the one card that it has, which is its ability to strangle the world's economic supply chains, let's say. And Trump loves to keep saying, oh, Iran, we destroyed their air force, we destroyed their navy, we killed their leaders. Well, number one, they didn't really have much of an air force. They had old, I think, F-4 fighters from the 1960s. They didn't have a navy. I mean, they had like small ships that were mostly like coastal water ships. They didn't have a navy. They weren't trying to go up against aircraft carriers and cruisers, etc. And even though many of Iran's leaders were killed, there are new leaders in their place, and the Iranian government has not fallen. The one thing Iran absolutely has with ample supply is missiles. Lots and lots of missiles that can take out the pipelines, that can take out ships, that can take out, let's say, LNG trains in Qatar, missiles that can take out U.S. military bases, which has already been demonstrated, obviously, missiles that can hit U.S. naval ships like the USS Ford, or, you know, drones. Right? So drones and missiles is actually, that's all that Iran needs to fight this war because of its geography. Because it is sitting right there in supreme control over the most important waterway on planet Earth that is relevant to modern civilization and its hunger for hydrocarbons. So because of that unique geology, you could say, well, geology plus geography combined, Iran is in the most important position in the world. And Iran knows it, and Iran is not going to surrender to Trump no matter what. No matter what Trump does, no matter how many bombs he drops, no matter how many threats, no matter how many power plants he takes offline, Iran can continue to maintain control over the Strait of Hormuz. And it can make the entire world pay a very desperate cost for the loss of energy. And so every time Trump escalates, for example, by attacking Iranian flag tankers, then Iran matches that retaliation by upping its target list. Now, understand that Trump initiates these things, and Iran simply responds. So it's Trump is the one driving the escalation, and Iran is simply responding or retaliating after it is attacked or after it is threatened. If Trump were to walk away, then this whole situation would de-escalate. But Trump can't do that psychologically because he's some kind of, you know, demonic narcissist at this point, like demon-possessed lunatic with a massive ego who wants to win everything, which in his mind means making the other party lose everything. So Trump will escalate and escalate and escalate beyond the point of all reason, which is why so many top members of the military have already either resigned or been forced out, because this is getting to the point where Trump is, you know, ordering the military to do insane, crazy things, and the military commanders are saying, sir, that is not possible to do. Like, let's land 10,000 troops and take the Karg Island, you know. And the commanders say that it'd be a slaughter. It'd be a suicide mission. And you can only imagine Trump in the Oval Office. I don't care if it's a suicide mission. Just do it. We can win. I say we're winners. Nobody can defeat the U.S. military. We're the greatest, strongest military in the world. The biggest, beautiful military in the world. And the commanders will say, but sir, 10,000 troops isn't enough. They would all be slaughtered. You know, you can see where this is going. So Trump has this imaginary world inside his head that has no bearing on reality. But the military commanders are trying to give him the real world picture, which is like, hey, we can't even get our naval vessels too close to the Strait of Hormuz or they will be attacked and probably set on fire and damaged, etc. And hey, you know, we tried to go in and you know, rescue the uranium with that fake cover story about the downed pilot. We tried that. We lost a bunch of transport planes. We lost a bunch of helicopters. Probably got a bunch of soldiers shot up and killed. We were lucky to get out of there alive. That didn't work. And the cover story was necessary to try to deceive the American people into thinking this was some kind of a victory, some kind of a successful rescue mission. No, it was a failed uranium extraction mission is what that was. Well, next, is Trump going to land like 20,000 troops on the shores of Iran? And then as they're all slaughtered, is he going to tell us that we've won, that we've taken Iran? Is he going to plant like an American flag on some dirt mound in southern Iran and say, we now control Iran. I'm the president, you know, because he did that with Venezuela. That's not going to last much longer either, by the way. A lot of interesting things happening there, but we'll cover that another day. Trump can't take Iran, and he can't control the Strait of Hormuz. But he doesn't know that, and it's impossible to reason with the man at this point. So he continues to push the escalation, and Iran continues to respond with retaliation. As long as this cycle continues, here's where it goes. Either, number one, America tries to use nuclear weapons, which I think Trump will actually order the use of nuclear weapons, and I think that his military commanders will stop him. I do. I've pondered this scenario. I think Trump will order the U.S. to nuke Iran, and I think it will fail. I think that the nukes won't be launched, and Trump will be either defied, because every sworn soldier has the right, or actually the duty, to disobey illegal orders. So that's one thing. But secondly, I think Trump could be deposed. I think there could be quite literally either a political or a military coup against Trump to remove him from power if he starts to order nuclear weapons to be used. Because there are smarter people in the chain of command than Trump, obviously. Almost everybody's smarter than Trump when it comes to military matters. And some of those people will realize that, hey, if we nuke Iran, then probably Russia will nuke Washington, D.C. Or China might nuke New York City. I mean, who knows? I'm not saying for sure that that would happen, but you're opening the door. You're opening the door. If you're going to go nuclear against Iran, you're opening the door to nuclear retaliation from Iran's allies. And between Russia and China and all their hypersonic missiles and their Oreshniks and, you know, the ballistics, ICBM, everything, the hyperglide vehicles, the U.S. stands no chance of surviving as a nation if we open the door to nuclear war. And then we will end up having our cities nuked and destroyed. And I think there are some people around Trump and in the Pentagon who are very much aware of this, and they would do everything to try to stop it. I think there are still some sensible people in the chain of command. I hope there are. Because Trump is insane, and there's nothing that he won't do to try to feed his ego. Because he's a megalomaniac at this point. He thinks he'll win a Nobel Peace Prize by nuking 90 million people. I mean, you know how he keeps saying, peace through strength, peace through strength. Might as well just upgrade that, change it to peace through nukes. Peace through nukes, because that's pretty much what they believe in. Oh, and by the way, I should tell you, Pete Hegseth will be the fall guy for all of this. Hegseth, the drunk, is going to be the fall guy. He's obviously being positioned to be the one to take the fall when things go horribly wrong. They're probably just keeping Pete Hegseth around until the suicide slaughter of U.S. soldiers when they try to carry out a landing to try to take southern Iran. And then when all those soldiers are slaughtered and sent home in body bags, if they can find all the parts, then Hegseth is going to be sacrificed on the altar of the Pentagon. That's his role. And then he'll spend the rest of his life drinking himself to death with liver disease and everything else. He won't even be able to be a Fox News host again because he's a war criminal at this point. He'll probably be indicted by the ICC sooner or later. So that's Hegseth's fate, right? But there's something else you need to know. Trump is also going to be sacrificed by Netanyahu. Netanyahu knows that he can throw Trump away. Trump is disposable in the eyes of Netanyahu. And that, in fact, Netanyahu is making Trump do things that will lead to a defeat of the GOP and will give rise to the Democrats in not just the midterms, but following the 2028 elections, that is, if our country still exists. Netanyahu and his team of, you know, deep state agents and money launderers, etc., they are working heavily on the Democrats to make sure they get a pro-Israel Democrat into the White House. And then Trump will be the fall guy for everything that went wrong between now and then. See, Netanyahu can just, I mean, he's like a demon. He can possess somebody's body. I mean, figuratively, politically speaking, and then he can make them do crazy things and then throw away that body when he's done and then possess another body and then use that one for 3 or 4 years and throw that body away. Again, I'm speaking metaphorically here. But he will do that with different political stooges. And today, it's Trump. Next, it might be, you know, Newsom or somebody like that. Or, heck, could be Hillary Clinton. You know, she's still potentially in the running. Or even worse, what if they bring back Kamala, you know, and AOC or something? That would be insane. But it's Trump's total abandonment of his principles that is leading us to a future where Democrats are going to seize control, and then they're also going to be totally controlled by Netanyahu and Israel, right? So it's going to be another layer of disaster on top of the current disaster that Trump is creating. But remember, Trump is doing this, being ordered to do so by Netanyahu. Clearly, he's always answering to Netanyahu and to Israel. So they are ordering Trump to basically commit political suicide in pushing this war and to order perhaps tens of thousands of U.S. troops to also commit military suicide. And then Hegseth and Trump will both be gone from the political landscape, and Netanyahu will just bring in new people. Because make no mistake, the voters of America are not in charge of anything at this point. Israel has total control over the United States government. And the only way this stops is if Israel is stopped. And that's the one thing that Iran might be able to do as a favor to the whole world, is to stop Israel's genocide and evil and infestation of the United States government. Wouldn't it be interesting if Iran stopped Israel and actually set America free from being entangled with this serpent, this snake known as Netanyahu? Wouldn't it be wild if one day we had Iran to thank for getting our country back instead of Trump? Trump promised to give us America back, but he just sold us out to Israel. Iran, if Iran defeats Israel, could actually give America back to the American people. Think about that. I know, pretty wild. So it's critical to understand that our modern world is so dependent on these hydrocarbons that it cannot function at its current level of function and current level of food consumption, current level of transportation and manufacturing and jobs, etc., if it's missing one-third of the world's oil supply. It simply cannot. And so that means there will be a global contraction. And it just so happens, because of geography, that our world needs hydrocarbons that come from just a few key places and that are transported by ships, tankers, that have to sail through a few key choke points. And you know, these are just the cards that we were dealt. And these choke points provide an enormous amount of control to countries like Egypt, for example, over the Suez, or Iran over the Strait of Hormuz, or, you know, look at the Strait of Malacca, or look at the Panama Canal. These choke points are the most important points of control for modern civilization. And our world cannot function unless these points are all open and traffic is flowing. And it's not currently. It is not. And we are now, what, 7 weeks into this? Something that Trump and his people said would be over in 1 weekend. Remember that? Yeah, it's been 7 weeks, or coming up on 7 weeks now. It'll be 2 months in another week. And then we will enter month three. And there's no end in sight. Because, again, Iran is not going to surrender to Trump. And Trump is apparently only going to keep escalating. Where this ends is anyone's guess, but it's doing tremendous damage to the world economy, world food production, capital destruction, stability, currency destruction, etc. It's doing so much damage all over the world right now. Every hour of every day, as the clock is ticking, our world is being torn down, and Trump just won't back off. He won't back off because he's insane and he's demon-possessed, I think, at this point as well. And he will be thrown under the bus when this is all said and done, like I said earlier. So that's the situation. That's where we stand right now. My guess is, even though I'm recording this late Sunday night, my guess is markets are going to get hammered today badly. Oil is going to go back up. Gold and silver will probably move up somewhat, especially gold. Maybe not silver as much. But in fact, silver could actually go down depending on how it's interpreted by industry. But nevertheless, the market's going to take a hit. It's overvalued. And we're going to be moving into a chapter now where it's not just, hey, it's, you know, there's a problem way over there, but it doesn't affect us. We're about to move into a chapter where it's painful for Americans, where gas is over $4 a gallon on average, and diesel will be over $5 or $6 a gallon on average, and where groceries keep going up, and where supply chains start to break down. That's going to be happening over the next few weeks. And if you get to a point where, let's say, this is 90 days of things being closed down, or the Strait of Hormuz in particular, if you get to a point of 90 days, then the pain is going to start becoming really intense. And I don't know if any of you have ever done Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but you're familiar with the term of tapping out, you know? If your opponent has you in a rear naked choke or some kind of a choke hold, like a triangle, and your head and one of your arms is caught inside their leg triangle, and they're wrenching their ankle down and leg curling and pulling that leg around your neck. And yes, I've been in that position because I trained in BJJ, and I've done that to many other people as well. Well, everybody taps out. Everybody taps, like tap, tap, tap. Oh shit. Can't stay here. You win, you know? So the tap out is what you do when you're polite, when you're training in martial arts, you tap out, or, you know, BJJ or wrestling or whatever, you know, you tap out. But in this conflict in the Middle East, nobody is willing to tap out. So everybody's just going to make the pain worse and worse and worse. Because it doesn't affect Trump. He doesn't have to go buy groceries. He doesn't pay for gas at the pump. He doesn't care. He doesn't care about the American people. He's going to throw Europe under the bus. He's going to throw Taiwan under the bus, and South Korea, Japan, the American people, the American economy, the American farmer. He's going to throw everybody under the bus as long as he gets his ego propped up by, you know, acting like a big man here. And he doesn't care about you. He's going to throw the whole world under the bus, and he's not going to tap out until somehow he's forced to. And I don't know when that day is coming, but I have a suspicion it's not going to be any day soon. So you need to hunker down and prepare for months of this. Months of this. You need to prepare for 1/3 of the world's energy supply to be shut off for many, many months, possibly even going into the fall. I mean, theoretically, it could go to the end of the year or even more. I mean, who knows? But prepare for that and get ready for the economic fallout. Some resources for you, of course, read my articles at naturalnews.com. They're very informative. Listen to my podcast here and my interviews at brightvideos.com. And then on top of that, our sponsors include the Satellite Phone Store, SAT123.com, and they have solar generators, as well as dark bags, which are the Faraday bags, EMP protection. And then our online store, healthrangerstore.com, has storable food, long-term, storable, freeze-dried, certified organic, lab-tested, ultra-clean, and even meals that you can get, like we have our macaroni and cheese, that's everything is real, like real cheese, real butter, real cream. It's all real. Nothing's fake. It's not like, you know, grocery store crap. And then on top of that, if you want gold and silver, our sponsor in that space is Battalion Metals. You can reach them at metalswithmike.com. And they have very competitive pricing, very honest operation. And as you know, they're also in partnership with Tucker Carlson. So check out those sources if those can help you. And you can also read all the free books and download the free books at brightlearn.ai. There's now 50,000 plus free books, many of them on preparedness. It's a good time to get well informed about getting off grid, being more self-reliant, you know, building a solar system, whatever, having backup power. This is a good time to do that. Growing more of your own food, making your own medicine, learning how to use an ultrasonic jewelry cleaner to extract medicine from herbs that you've grown, things like that. This is a great time to learn those skills. So thank you for listening. Mike Adams here, the Health Ranger, with brightvideos.com. Take care.
In The Art of War, Chinese General Sun Tzu said, "The way to disarm your opponent is to feign weakness when you are strong." Donald Trump, in the greatest war strategy book of all time, The Art of the Deal of the War, wrote that feigning competence will confuse and befuddle your opponent as well as your voters. When everyone is confused by your make-believe announcements of victory, you can short the oil market and make out like a bandit. That is true mastery of the art of the deal of the war. I am Master Foukov. Until next time.
Bright Videos.
Well, Elon Musk is pushing a universal high income again and claiming that this is the only way to handle the new economy as AI and robotics begins to take over more and more human jobs. The idea is that you just print trillions of dollars of government money and hand it out to everybody. And of course that won't work. And here to explain why that won't work, I have my new avatar, Frank DeLuccia. That's the name I gave him. I designed this avatar over the weekend, and he's a 1950s style investigator, or maybe a private investigator or a police detective, something like that. He's a cool guy, and you're going to love his voice, but he's really good at explaining things, especially things involving logic and numbers, you know, because he's from the 1950s, and so he knows how to think, you know, knows how to do math and things. Unlike today's college graduates, can barely do any math. So let's let Frank DeLuccia explain this, and then we will continue.
The thing about so-called universal high income is that it would lead to hyperinflation and currency collapse. Here's the math. 100 million people times $10,000 per month times 12 months equals $12 trillion a year. To put that in context, total federal spending in fiscal year 2024 was roughly $6.75 trillion, and total federal revenue was about $4.9 trillion. So this single program would cost nearly twice the entire existing federal budget, and about 2.5 times all federal tax revenue. It would roughly triple total government spending overnight. It obviously can't be funded by taxation alone, so it would require printing money at a pace that would rapidly devalue the dollar, effectively destroying much of the purchasing power the payments were meant to provide. The recipients would get bigger numbers on their checks, but the prices on the shelves would be rising just as fast or faster. Before long, the people would find themselves right back where they started. Impoverished, yet receiving a high income derived entirely from money printing that rapidly erodes the purchasing power of all the dollars they're given. Universal high income, in other words, would actually achieve universal poverty and despair. Basic economics. I'm Frank DeLuccia, reporting for brightvideos.com.
Bright Videos.
All right, so there you go. That was Frank DeLuccia. He's an Italian-American New Yorker, by the way. That's his backstory. And his name, DeLuccia, means of the light. So he's a truth teller. Frank DeLuccia. It's kind of a play on, you know, it's a play on words. It's a little bit of Italian, a little bit of Latin, you know. Anyway, I hope you get it. Just as a side note, all of that you just saw was created on my own local hardware using entirely open source models with a lot of custom code. Let me tell you, I had to build an entire video composition editing app that runs on my desktop in order to put that together. And it's part of what I promised, that we're going to be doing first short documentaries that will be in the 15-minute range. And that will advance to becoming full-length documentaries. And my prediction was that the full-length would happen in 2027. But honestly, the full-length may happen later this year, because I'm now very confident that we can do the short documentaries. And that's going to be coming soon. But anyway, Frank DeLuccia here, a minute 24. That's the longest avatar video that I've put out. But I want you to know, that's 100% local. So even the voice design, that's not 11 Labs. The image design, that's not, you know, Gemini or Nano Banana or anything. Nothing in the cloud. 100% local, including the video, everything. Everything local. So if I had no internet, I could still produce that or other things like that. And I'm a huge believer in the importance of that because, of course, I've been censored for well over a decade, and I've been deplatformed. And I also know that some of the topics that I want to cover with other avatars will include things like vaccines and cancer cures and things that will probably get you banned if you try to use, you know, online platforms like Seedance or HeyGen or Google or whatever. They'll ban you. So I refuse to play that game. I go the extra mile and learn how to do everything local. All right, so back to UBI here, or UHI, Universal High Income. Frank DeLuccia explained it there. I know you get that. If you're listening to this, you're already well-informed and you're smart. But a lot of people don't get it. And the thing is that it sounds very seductive to the, let's say, the economically illiterate masses. And so the job of Elon Musk, who is a mascot puppet of the globalist agenda. He's the mascot for the military-industrial complex and globalist depopulation agendas. And, you know, I mean, he's a mascot. He doesn't run all the companies that he claims to run. He's put out there, he's a front man. And right now he's fronting this idea that you don't have to be afraid of the rise of robots or AI job replacement, because you're all going to get paid to sit around and do nothing. That's what he says, that universal high income will make everybody rich. He literally says everyone will live in a penthouse, but he never mentions then who's gonna live on the first floor. He says everybody's gonna live in a penthouse and that almost everything will be free. Like everything you need is gonna be free. Food, transportation, labor, clothing, it's all gonna be free. And thus, you won't even need much of an income. This is the line of the AI utopian, the propagandists. The robot utopia people. They are pushing an obvious lie, but it's a seductive lie, and they're trying to convince you to lay down your guard while they actually are pushing a global human extermination agenda. That's what this is all about. So they want to catch you off guard and tell you everything's going to be okay and you're all going to be rich and you're going to have everything you need. But in reality, they're working up ways to exterminate you. Now, how do we know this? How do we know this? Number one, it's obviously false that everything will be free just because there's a bunch of robots around. Now, even if labor is free or near free, let's say, and it could be true that at scale, robots will make a lot of labor very low cost. That is true. Although that's many years away. But even if that's true, robots can't make physical matter out of nothing. So you still need polymers. You still need fibers. You still need, you know, chemicals to make modern products. You still need plastics, right? You still need fiberglass. You still need metal. You need aluminum. You need alloys. You need all these things. There are energy inputs into all of those things. Energy is not free. And there's also energy input into robots, and that energy isn't free either. Robots have maintenance schedules. Robots have parts. And robots have an upfront cost. And robots will have necessary upgrades. You know, parts will wear out, fingers or shoulder joints or whatever. So even if labor is free, which it can't be, the materials and the energy that are needed to produce things, those things won't be free. How will it ever be free to just have endless natural gas, for example? How would it ever be free to have endless hydrocarbons? I mean, you've been watching the situation in the Middle East. You know it takes tankers to sail into the Persian Gulf and load up on these, you know, hydrocarbons. And the on-land equipment that's necessary to condense the hydrocarbons into liquid form, that equipment costs tens of billions of dollars. Thus, since it costs tens of billions of dollars, thus the hydrocarbons are never going to be free because they're going to have to pay back their investment and make a profit. So natural gas will always cost something, something substantial. Oil will always cost something. In fact, we may be looking at the cheapest oil that we're going to see for years to come right now, you know, because of the destruction of the infrastructure that's happening in the Middle East. Solar energy, people like to say, well, solar is free. You know, well, it's not actually free if you try to collect it, because then you need solar panels, and then you need batteries, and then you need charge controllers and inverters. And all of this equipment has a lot of copper, a lot of aluminum, a lot of electronics. All of it requires manufacturing, which takes energy, it takes engineering, it takes know-how. The solar panels require rare earths that are expensive to mine, and who's going to do the mining? Say, well, robots are going to do all the mining. Okay, great. And then when all the rocks grind up their gears and they fall apart like C-3PO in Return of the Jedi, then who's going to pull them all back together again, and at what cost? You know, you're going to have to replace them. Again, robots don't make everything free. And the people pushing that, like Elon Musk, are just hoping you're economically illiterate. Robots won't even make food free, by the way. Although, I'm an advocate of finding, as I've said many times, I want a weed-pulling robot to help grow food locally. That's my number one use case, is to use robotics to grow food. Because if they're capable of it, then that would lower the cost of high-quality food created locally. However, is that food free? Is it free? Well, no, it's not free because you still have to have irrigation. So you have to have a means of getting water to it. So there's probably a pump involved somewhere. Pumps aren't free. Pumps contain copper and stainless steel and tubing and piping. And then there's electricity and power that goes into the pump. You know, no matter what system you're going to use to grow things, you're going to need some kind of plumbing system, unless you just happen to have the right amount of rain, which is not that common. And so you're going to need, you know, PEX pipes, you're going to need tools, you're going to need batteries, etc. You're going to need connectors. They're all expensive. And they're all about to get even more expensive. And then, what do you do after you harvest all the food? What do you do then? Well, typically, you want to preserve some of it. And so, how do you do that? Well, maybe you have a food dehydrator. Well, somebody's got to process the food and lay it on the sheets and put it in the dehydrator, and then that thing's got to have energy, and energy isn't free. And maybe you're going to do canning. Well, guess what? All of that requires parts. It requires you know, equipment. It requires jars and lids and a cook stove and a pressure cooker device, etc. So everything has a cost to it. It's not going to just suddenly be free because they say, oh, a bunch of robots are going to make everything free. It doesn't work that way. So that's actually the that's the narrative for suckers who are actually going to be first in line to be exterminated in the global depopulation agenda. And I have a saying that it's not going to be UBI, or Universal Basic Income. It's going to be DOA, which is dead on arrival, because that's how they want to deliver humans. They're not out to make you wealthy. They're out to exterminate you, ultimately. They want to exterminate billions of human beings. That's really where this is going. And the Universal Basic Income or Universal High Income is just the cover story to catch you off guard and let you think that, oh, you're going to live in a penthouse and everything's going to be free and you won't ever have to work, you know. And it's basically, it's kind of like the pitch of communism, isn't it? You're going to get everything. You're going to have an apartment, a penthouse. You're going to have food. You're going to have clothing. And you don't even have to work. The state will provide. Yeah, that's communism. That's also, you know, techno-feudalism, frankly, is where this is going. And of course, you'll be controlled for as long as you are alive. You'll be controlled with a CBDC. They'll monitor all your finances and your expenditures, and they will lock up your money if they don't like what you're doing, obviously. And so even if you're not dead, you will be enslaved in the system. That's what they're pushing for. So maybe we should call it, instead of UBI or UHI, it should be UME, Universal Mass Extermination, or Universal Human Depopulation, UHD, whatever. That's the ultimate goal. Because, again, if you do the math, as Frank DeLuca did there, the U.S. government can't print the money to fund everybody with a high income. And I only used 100 million people in there, which is only one-third of the population. Now, I mean, technically, you could try to print that much money. It would go belly up very quickly. You would end up in a Weimar Germany type of situation. Hyperinflation, currency collapse, mass poverty, despair, famine, social revolts, collapse, you name it. That's what would happen if they try that. And they know it. They know it. They're just telling you that to try to convince you to let your guard down so that they can exterminate you. Now, how are they going to exterminate you? Well, you've already seen some of the attempts through the depopulation COVID jabs. That's one way. But the coming way is famine, engineered famine, caused by the destruction of affordable energy. That's happening right now. That's why Trump closed the Strait of Hormuz. That's why Trump is pushing this war, or one of the reasons. That's why the United States blew up the Nord Stream pipelines under Joe Biden. This is why refineries are being set on fire all over the world. Have you noticed that? About 75 different fires or explosions or different kind of shutdown events have happened over the last couple of years of major refineries. And that's all by design. I mean, there may be a few accidents in there, but most of it's engineered. They are shutting down the system on purpose in order to have energy lockdowns, which will lead to engineered famine. And from engineered famine, then, obviously, they can more easily control and corral people. They can round people up. They can throw them into concentration camps, and then they can dispatch them there. And that's exactly what they're gearing up to do. COVID was just a practice run, just a pilot program. What's coming next is the real deal. They're going to go for mass extermination by the billions. But they had to shut down the global energy infrastructure in order to achieve that. So, as always, the only solution to surviving all of this is radical self-reliance. Decentralization, getting off-grid, learning to grow your own food, create your own medicine, or stockpile food and medicine and garden seeds. Have your own real money, gold and silver. Get out of the system as much as you can. Have backup communications from satellite phones to de-Googled phones. Have backup power, you know, solar generators, solar collectors, etc. And all of that cost, you know, you're going to spend a lot actually to get everything in place to be ready to live more off grid. But it's worth it because those things can save your life. And those are the things that will allow you to continue to function when so many other people are swept up into the total surveillance death grid, you know, the extermination grid, where they have no money, no control, their bank accounts have been all seized, they have no way to purchase food, and then they have to go on the government food program, which is a total surveillance AI-driven, you know, scoring system to decide who to starve first. I mean, yeah, where did you think this was going? Of course, just like they score targets in Gaza, they're going to score targets all over the United States and decide who they should exterminate first. And AI will choose those targets. So, and that's what the tech is actually going to be weaponized for. But in the meantime, get as much off-grid as you can and follow my podcast because I teach these concepts. You can follow me at brightvideos.com. You can read my articles at naturalnews.com. And of course, I'll have a lot more avatar videos there explaining key concepts. Ultimately, I'm going to have some teaching avatars that actually provide lessons, you know, lesson plans, and some historical lessons, economic lessons, etc. So I'm all about using AR for knowledge and teaching, whereas the state uses AI for deception and deepfakes and things like that. And they're about to roll out a whole line of deepfakes to try to convince you that this war is popular and Trump is popular and Israel is popular, all those kinds of things, but it's all fake. So stay tuned, stay plugged in. Thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams. You can support this platform at healthrangerstore.com and also get yourself some backup food supplies, some heirloom non-GMO seeds, some iodine, long-term storable, certified organic, laboratory-tested superfoods, foods, personal care products, supplements, and so much more. Check it all out at healthrangerstore.com. Thank you for listening.
Just as the wise mind can engage in thinking without thinking, Master Donald Trump has demonstrated how to unblock the strait by blocking it, and how to take the uranium dust without taking it. This is strategic mastery, equivalent to sitting without sitting, and tweeting without thinking. I am Master Fukov. Until next time.
Bright Videos.
On Friday morning, Trump tweeted out that the Strait of Hormuz is fully open and that Iran has fully capitulated. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he meant. And it's fully open. It's over. We've won. And of course, all of Trump's supporters then immediately see 5D chess. It works. We're winning. You know, just the same stuff. And I'm thinking, have people learned nothing? Have people learned nothing? Trump's words, listen carefully, Trump's words have zero credibility. They mean nothing. He tweets random stuff every few hours, and then he will contradict himself a few hours later. And whenever he tweets something, it always turns out that it's not real, it's not true. He's not talking to anybody in Iran. They've agreed to nothing, etc. So I don't know why people haven't figured this out yet. You know, the saying goes, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. What about fooling you 50 times? And Trump people are like, keep fooling me again, you know, because they literally have no ability to think critically at this point. So let's break down what is actually happening with the Strait of Hormuz, because as of right now, still not open. So even though Trump said that it's fully open, that Iran has agreed to fully open the Strait, Trump said, but we will continue to block it from our side. So we will block all Iranian ports using the U.S. Navy. Any ships that go to and from Iran's ports will be blocked. Well, right there, that's not acceptable to Iran. And then Iran reiterated that we will allow ships to pass with our permission, paying our toll, and they can only pass through the northern portion of the Strait of Hormuz that takes them much closer to Iran. And we will decide who gets to pass and who doesn't get to pass, and we will only allow certain commercial ships, but never from the USA or Israel. And in addition, Iran explained that this will only be in place until next Tuesday, until the end of the so-called ceasefire that's currently in place. And this will only be honored if Israel continues to honor the ceasefire and stop bombing Lebanon, which will never happen because Israel doesn't want a ceasefire. Israel doesn't want peace. Israel wants to keep bombing. And so effectively, Iran just reiterated what their position has been all along, which is that we control the strait, we determine who goes through, and if you want to go through, you pay a toll to us. So that position is not acceptable to Trump or to the U.S. Navy, let's say, which means that nothing has changed. So Trump announces something, it means nothing. Nothing has changed. The strait is still closed. And as of the time I'm recording this, which is Friday afternoon, there are no new vessels moving through the strait other than one cruise ship that obviously doesn't carry, it's not an oil tanker. So a cruise ship was allowed through, probably paid the fee. You know, $1 million, we'll let you through. Oh, you're a cruise ship? Okay, you get a discount, $500,000 for you because we just want you out of the way. So a cruise ship was allowed through. Yeah, who cares? They should let the cruise ship through anyway. It's not about cruise ships. This is about oil and energy and who controls the world's energy choke points. So in essence, Iran has capitulated nothing. And then also on a similar timescale, Trump had tweeted out that Iran is going to give us all their enriched uranium. We're going to take it all. And then Iran responded and said, no such conversation has ever taken place. We have agreed to no such thing. We're not going to give up the enriched uranium. So again, every time Trump tweets something, it literally means nothing. And I've jokingly said that Trump is a random word generator or that he's an LLM gone bad. You know how in the early days, before ChatGPT was good, you would talk to a large language model and it would just spit out random words. Those sound like Trump tweets today. And that's the way Trump's brain is operating. It's like a faulty LLM that hasn't completed fine-tuning phase or something. And the only thing dumber than what Trump says is the people who keep believing him for some reason, which includes a lot of stock market people and commodities traders. So today, after Trump tweeted the strait is fully open, oil plunged $10 a barrel. And then everybody is like, see, Trump wins. Oil's affordable. Gas is affordable. You know, once again, means nothing. And any commodities traders that go along with Trump's tweets are themselves idiots and will probably pay for their idiocy in financial losses because oil is not going to stay down in the 80s or $80 a barrel, something like that. No, not even close. We're probably going to see oil at $200 a barrel before this whole thing is over. Because again, there's still no agreement between Iran and Trump. So Trump is a market manipulator. He's always constantly trying to manipulate the markets, keep oil low, gold and silver low, but the stock market high. So he's always announcing good news that has no basis in fact. And then either 12 hours later or a day later or 2 days later, it all turns out that he made it all up. And then people move on to the next delusional tweet. So, well, this time it's real, you know. Seriously, how dumb do you have to be to keep believing this stuff? So the real bottom line here is that Iran remains in control of the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. Navy isn't even there. They're hundreds of kilometers outside the strait, basically committing piracy on the high seas, you know, threatening to interdict ships in international waters, which is an act of economic terrorism, according to J.D. Vance. I mean, they say it themselves. They say it's economic terrorism and we're going to do it, you know? So nothing has changed. The energy supply has not resumed. If oil prices are temporarily low, because of the artificial construct here, that's great for you. Go out and buy more gas, buy more diesel, store it, load up. That would be the smart thing to do, because it's not going to stay there very long. And if you want to stay informed on all of this, follow my podcast at brightvideos.com, and you can follow my articles at naturalnews.com, or you can follow my social media posts at brighteon.social. And I'm also on Telegram at Real Health Ranger. Yeah, that's it. So thank you for listening. Stay informed, stay alert, and don't believe anything Trump says. He is a random word generator. All right. Thanks for listening. Take care. So fertilizer prices are up 300% for many farmers in America and elsewhere around the world. Prices are either that high or the fertilizer just simply isn't available. So it is currently planting season, maybe late planting season for many areas, but still planting season for the more northern areas, and the fertilizer just isn't there. Or it's extremely expensive, which means farmers will use a lot less fertilizer. So this is your clue that food prices are going to go way up. You can count on it. And very few people are paying attention to this. As of right now, and I'm recording this on Friday, April 17th, the Strait of Hormuz is still not open. So as of today, Friday, April 17th, the Strait of Hormuz is still not open. Even though Trump announced it was, he announced it earlier this morning, he said, the Strait of Hormuz is fully open. And of course, that turned out to be completely fake news, as always. So the point is, there's still no fertilizer sailing through the Strait of Hormuz. There's no urea, there's no ammonia, there's no sulfuric acid, which is also used in manufacturing fertilizer, etc. So this choke point is not open. And as long as it's not open, food scarcity is going to get bad. Now, obviously, there's a buffer time, and you know this very well. So right now, you can still go out and you can purchase food at the moment, because that's food that was grown in the last growing season, right? That food is, of course, being sold right now. It's going to run out soon. And then you're going to have to depend on the food that's being grown now in the months ahead. And the food that's being grown now will be a lot more expensive and a lot less available, because when farmers use less fertilizer, then crop yields fall. All right. So that's just the basics. But you already know all of that. That's probably review. What happens when tens of millions of Americans can no longer afford to buy food? What happens? You've already seen a little bit of that with the sort of reconfiguration of food stamps and what people are allowed to spend food stamps on. In the state of Texas, for example, it was made illegal for food stamps to be used to purchase soda. And so soda sales have absolutely plummeted. Now, 25% of soda sales were depending on food stamps. Yeah, because people who are on food stamps, they just love to get diabetes too on top of it. So they buy the worst possible junk foods and junk drinks and junk sodas, etc. That's just who they are. So as the soda sales are plummeting and people are finding out they can't spend food stamps on soda, they start posting videos all over social media like, what do you mean I can't get my Dr. Pepper? Or what do you mean I can't buy this whatever, you know, garbage processed food they normally live on? And, you know, it's crazy that food stamps should be usable to buy processed junk food. That's been a racket that just benefits the food corporations and the Walmarts and the banks that process the transactions and take a cut, etc. The whole food stamp system is totally corrupt. It's a handout to a bunch of, I mean, it's corporate welfare is really what it is, more than human welfare. It's corporate welfare. But when people find out that they can't buy junk food on food stamps, they get really mad, and it causes an increase in food theft. And that's where I'm going with this podcast. So as food prices go through the roof because of the lack of fertilizer, because of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, because Trump decided to launch a war on Iran in order to do the bidding of Israel, you're going to see rampant shoplifting of food in America later this year. So the lower income class people will just steal, 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 and they will justify it to themselves. They will say, well, it's the grocery store's fault for having prices so high, or it's, you know, maybe it's Trump's fault in their mind. I mean, some of it is Trump's fault. Maybe whoever's fault it is, they will justify it, and they will say, I have a right to be able to eat. And they will go in and they will just take the food. And they will just walk out of there. And you've seen this over the years where, especially in places like California, but also liberal cities, shoplifters are never prosecuted. Although the law has changed, for many years in California, there was a law on the books that said you could shoplift up to $1,000 per store, per incident. So you could go in, and people did with trash bags, and they would just load up everything off the shelves, load them up into the trash bags, and they would just walk out with the trash bag full of, you know, hundreds of dollars of goods. And there's nothing the shop owner could do. If you called the police would say, there's nothing you can do. This is the law. They can steal $1,000. And then that same person could go to the shop next door and steal $1,000 there. And there's nothing you could do. And they would just loot the whole block. You know, first, here's a grocery store. Here's a consumer product store. Here's a convenience store. We're just going to loot and steal $1,000 at a time over and over and over again. It was completely legal. And even to this day, in a lot of liberal cities, shoplifters will not be prosecuted. So what's going to happen then is grocery stores in particular will shut down in those areas. Because if you open your doors and there's just a steady stream of shoplifters walking through your shop every day, just looting your store and stealing all your food, you can't function as a business. You're going to shut down the store to stop the losses, of course. And that's what a lot of store chains have already done. So when that happens, then you end up with food deserts, as they're called, which is areas of cities, mostly low-income areas, where people tend to shoplift a lot more, that have effectively no food options other than fast food. You know, fast food. And then you'll have increased thefts of fast food. People will, you know, hold up a Burger King or try to steal from the drive-thru or whatever. Although it's harder to steal from fast food, you don't really get as much as shoplifting from a grocery store, because in a grocery store, you can just apparently load up an entire bag full of expensive meats and things like that. So this is going to result in the social uprising effect of food inflation. You're going to have very unhappy people in these areas. And even among those citizens who are law-abiding, they will join protests. You'll have a lot of public protests. You'll have a lot of angry people. You'll have a lot of shoplifting. You'll have a lot of business closures, which then contributes to unemployment in the area, because all the people who worked at those stores now have no jobs. And then those people become desperate because, well, where are you going to find a new job these days? That's very difficult. And then those people, some of them, start becoming shoplifters, etc. So this is a cycle of local economic doom and despair that leads to social uprisings. And that's when you're going to start to have real political implications to all of this, which is, you know, you'll have chaos in some cities. You'll have eventually probably left-wing terrorism, Molotov cocktails being thrown at not just police, but federal buildings, federal agents, etc. Any attempt to try to police these cities is going to fail because the people are hungry. The people are starving. Or maybe not starving at first, because many of them are obese, but they're hungry and eventually they will face starvation. And that will only exacerbate everything we're talking about here. So, the response from the government will be authoritarianism. It will be a crackdown, ICE style, where Trump will probably dispatch federal agents onto the streets of these liberal cities, and they will just start executing people. They will just start shooting Americans like Trump's people already did in Minneapolis with the ICE agents. So you're going to have government agents executing starving Americans on the streets of America. And when that happens, now remember, Trump justified the bombing of Iran, claiming that they mistreated their own protesters. And yet Trump will order the shooting of Americans in the streets of America. Think about that. I mean, he's already ordered it with immigration. He will order it against American citizens. That will only add fuel to the fire of the uprising. And that will cause many blue state governors and blue city mayors to revolt aggressively against Trump. There will be more calls for his impeachment, removal from power. There will be, you know, nefarious things happening behind the scenes politically that will try to target Trump and try to, you know, remove him from all power, etc. So the bottom line in all of this is, well, it's a domino effect. Trump's war on Iran has caused fertilizer to be scarce and expensive, which causes food failures, which leads to all these other effects I've mentioned. The closing of grocery stores, food deserts, rampant shoplifting, hunger, famine, social chaos, uprisings, political ramifications, job loss, etc. Basically, a spiral into economic doom and social unrest, social chaos. That's what's coming for America. So I've said it 1,000 times, but get out of the cities. Don't be stuck in a city when this happens. And the bluer the city, the more you need to leave, in my opinion. But that's where this is headed. Definitely get prepared. You can get backup supplies from our sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store, SAT123.com, if you want sat phones and solar generators. If you want backup food supplies and iodine and other preparedness items, check out our store, healthrangerstore.com. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and you can follow my work at brightvideos.com and also naturalnews.com for the articles and infographics. Thank you for listening. Take care. There's so much hype around the Artemis II space mission. I thought I would just break it down for you and explain the only real reasons why the United States or any country is interested in space technology. There are really only three reasons. None of them have anything to do with the advancement of science or being heroic or, you know, leading innovation. Those are all just BS cover stories. There are only three reasons to go to space. Number one is weapons dominance. So military technology, and of course, as you know, the Earth is at the bottom of a giant gravity well created by the mass of Earth. And the high ground is anything above Earth. And that would include the moon, of course. So the moon is important as a military base. The moon is important as an observation base. The moon is important to place gravity detectors, which can theoretically detect faster than light travel. Well, it's not theoretical. That's just a fact. So the reason there's so much interest in the moon in particular is because, well, that's where it's an obvious place to put weapons, to do catapult-launched weapons of mass that can pound targets on Earth, okay? So that's number one. The second reason to go to space is in search of minerals. That would be space mining. Now, the economics of space mining don't make any sense right now. It's still orders of magnitude more expensive to mine something in space, you know, an asteroid, let's say, and bring it back to Earth, compared to just mining on Earth. So for now, Earth mining, for a long time, Earth mining will remain the dominant form of mining. But mining in outer space actually makes sense in order to acquire materials for moon bases. Because, you know, bringing those materials back to Earth requires a tremendous amount of energy and risk, you know, to bring something back to the bottom of a large gravity well is actually, it takes a lot of energy to do that. You know, because you can't just throw it down at Earth. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you can build a capsule of some kind, have it re-enter, and then have parachutes, right? But there's still a lot of energy that goes into the construction of all of that. And it would just make those minerals ridiculously expensive, even if you could find them and mine them out of asteroids, which itself is an extremely difficult and costly endeavor. However, in the long run, I'm talking 100 years, mining minerals out of asteroids could be a viable source for materials for non-Earth bases, is my point. But that's so far in the future, it's not really relevant to the reason that governments are exploring space right now. All right, the third reason is because of course, orbital AI data centers, and the fact that in space you have access to a tremendous amount of solar energy, if you're going to stick with solar panels, because of course they're still covering up zero point energy and cold fusion and hot fusion and whatever else. So they're sticking with solar energy as the only thing that really works. But you know, the Earth itself only gets hit with a very tiny, tiny fraction of the sun's total output, obviously. Just look at the physics of it. Look at the geometry. So you can put data center satellites in orbit, and they can harvest, you know, a lot more energy. Just depends on how much you can build and launch. And that comes down to the cost per kilogram of mass to place it into orbit. And that cost is coming down substantially. Some of that credit goes to SpaceX because of their development of reusable launch vehicles. That alone cut the cost of launching into orbit by a factor of roughly 10x. But we need still another 10x, and I'm not sure what tech is going to get us there. Ultimately, we need to roll out, you know, gravity propulsion technology, which is just basically, you know, space-time warping tech that, yeah, it exists. I mean, the U.S. government already possesses all that stuff, Area 51 and et cetera. But they don't want to roll it out yet because, I don't know, maybe it's just too powerful, or they don't want humanity to have that advancement yet. So, you know, they're sticking with chemical rocket motors and solar panels, which are all pretty low-tech, actually. But anyway, once it's more economically feasible to launch data centers into orbit, then you're going to be able to have a massive expansion of AI technology in orbit. Whereas right now, the data centers on Earth are limited by the, you know, the power grids that are being overtaxed, at least in the United States, especially on the Eastern power grid. It's wildly overtaxed. And so the only real way to tap into more power without, well, you know, you're going to suffer the wrath of U.S. citizens if you tap into the power grid here on Earth, because the citizens are seeing much higher electricity rates, and they're starting to protest, and there are legal efforts that are starting to take place to bring down those prices, which makes it economically unfeasible for data centers to tap into all that power. You know, because then they would have to build their own data or power infrastructure, gas turbines and things like that. So because of that, it's becoming more economically feasible for the data center companies or the AI companies to look at orbital AI. And, you know, one of the big issues with AI data centers is heat dissipation. That's a huge part. It's like 40% of the energy consumption is getting rid of the freaking heat. And in space, you can get rid of the heat for free because the background temperature of outer space away from the sun is pretty close to absolute zero. And so you can get rid of heat relatively easily there. So that saves a lot of cost right there. But of course, the launch cost is very high up front. But anyway, that's where it's going, is orbital AI data centers that can then scale, you know, way beyond the limitations of even land geography on planet Earth. At some point, you could scale, you know, you could have AI data centers like a ring around the sun in an orbit lower than Earth's orbit. Let's say, you know, an orbit between Earth and Venus or something, but closer to Earth because we don't want high latency. But all these orbital data centers could be just soaking up the sun's energy. It could be a whole ring around the sun. So that would create super intelligence, or at least the infrastructure for it. And then we're talking about, you know, structures that encircle the sun to harness the sun's energy. We're talking about tapping the energy of a star in order to power artificial intelligence, which would be, you know, unimaginable what that would actually create. So, and remember that one of the key elements that's needed to build microchips is just silicon, which is found on every beach on, you know, everywhere around the world. Sand. You can take sand, you could turn it into intelligence if you add power to it. So we've got plenty of sand. And then you just need to add sunlight and harness it correctly and build the circuits correctly and the microchips and the transistors. And then you create, you know, super intelligence. So that's the third reason to get good at doing things in space. And that's in the long run, that's the bigger reason. In the short run, it's military dominance. In the long run, it's super intelligence. So bottom line is NASA, it's got nothing to do with advancing science for the, you know, for the purpose of science or the public good or serving humanity or any of that garbage. It's all bullshit narratives. It's all about domination, weapons, super intelligence, and ultimately, conquering the universe. And of course, they throw four astronauts in the ship because they're the mascots. You know, they might as well just put on like furry suits or something, because they're not there to do anything except to sell the propaganda. That's their only role. They're basically just tourists. It's really just pathetic. So anyway, that's the reality of what's happening. Thanks for listening. Mike Adams here. You can follow my podcast at brightvideos.com and my articles at naturalnews.com. Thank you for listening. Take care. Let me explain why so many people are turning to solar and electric vehicles and battery storage right now. It's because of the Strait of Hormuz. It's because of this war that Trump started with Iran. And, you know, it's been great for the world economy. It's been great for agriculture to be able to have access to easy energy, you know, to buy a gallon of diesel and get so much work out of a gallon of diesel or a barrel of oil. It's amazing, actually, how much labor is represented in a gallon of diesel or a barrel of oil or a gallon of gasoline. It's been the deal of the century, actually, to be able to extract it out of the ground and refine it at scale and end up with something that can just do work. You know, it can turn a PTO. It can rotate an engine. It can plow a field. It can run a generator. It can do all these things. It's miraculous. And yet, the problem is that it all comes from centralized sources. And we're finding that out the hard way now with the Strait of Hormuz. But even before the Strait of Hormuz, remember what the Democrats were doing in America, all the climate cultists, and they were shutting down the coal-fired power plants, weren't they? Yeah, that's another form of, you know, fossil fuel, as they call it. But they were also putting emissions on vehicles via the EPA that would have made combustion engines illegal. By the year 2035, no combustion engine vehicles would have been allowed on U.S. roads. I mean, consumer-grade vehicles. And at the same time, they were banning imports of EVs from China. So you couldn't buy the world's best EVs, and you couldn't drive combustion engines. So what were you supposed to do? You know, just ride a bicycle everywhere. Just have a rickshaw, I guess. I don't know. But that was completely insane, and it just showed yet again how dangerous it is to rely on either governments or industries that function as choke points. They can choke off your access to fuel. You know, the refineries go down, boom, you have no fuel. The Strait of Hormuz gets closed, boom, 20% of the world's fuel supply effectively is shut off. Or the government changes its policies, boom, you can't access fuel. So sunlight cannot be stopped by governments, thank God. If they could stop it, they would. I mean, if they could tax it, they would. And of course, they can try to run these experiments of dumping particulate matter into the stratosphere. You know, the aerosol injection experiments. But that would take a number of years to make a huge difference in the diminishing of sunlight. I mean, it would take, I don't know, millions of flights of releasing millions of tons of particulate matter. Basically, they'd have to simulate a massive volcano going off, which is a lot of energy involved in that. And so it would take governments quite some time to make that happen. Now, that may be their goal eventually, but they haven't been able to achieve it yet, and it's not going to happen next year. And it's not something they can just flip a switch and dim the sun, although they would like to. So sunlight is persistent. Yeah, thank God. And it's resilient. It comes up every day, weather permitting. And governments can't interfere with your collection of sunlight. So you can buy solar panels all day long and you can collect all the energy you want from the sky. The problem is, the challenge has been, how do you store it? So this is where governments have been involved in suppressing technology and patents and so on in order to block advancements in battery technology. But they haven't been able to do so fully. And battery tech continues to be advanced by especially countries like China, but also South Korea and Japan. And there's even one company in Europe called Donut Lab that claims to have a new solid-state battery that is in production in their motorcycles, the Verge motorcycles. So there actually are advancements in battery technology that the U.S. government itself has not been able to suppress. And this is the opening for you and I, is to acquire this, I don't know if I want to call it revolutionary battery technology, but it keeps getting better now. It's better than lead acid, that's for sure. It's better than the old lithium ion. I mean, now we're talking about lithium iron phosphate as probably the most common battery chemistry today. And of course, there's sodium ion and there's like sodium sulfur batteries and there's lithium with manganese. And, there's some other different formulations that show a lot of promise. And it's not, they're not miraculous. They're still big and heavy, very big and very heavy. It can weigh like 75 pounds to have something that just stores like 5 kilowatt hours, So they're still big and heavy, but they are available. And with a little bit of ingenuity and some cost and some expertise and learning, you can put together relatively easily these days a solar charging battery storage off-grid system that can then charge up an electric vehicle, or it can charge electrical, batteries, appliances, cordless tools, or what have you. Or if you have a large enough system, it can run your house. Although that's a pretty large system if you want to go completely off-grid, and you would probably need a backup generator. But the Strait of Hormuz closure, which continues now, it's approaching its 7th week, and not going to be pretty. This is encouraging people to move over to electric vehicles and off-grid electric solutions. So the Hyundai company, which is a South Korean manufacturer of automobiles, I think it has the same parent company as Kia, by the way, but Hyundai has experienced a 500% increase in the sales of their electric vehicles. They have vehicles, I think they're called IONIQ, different IONIQ models that are EVs. And since we can't buy Chinese-made EVs because they're banned in America, because they're so affordable, and it would destroy Ford, right? And it would destroy GM, and it would destroy Tesla. So we can't buy Chinese vehicles in America. So South Korean-made vehicles become the go-to vehicle for EVs. So lots and lots of people are buying out the inventory of Hyundai right now. That's kind of interesting. And on top of that, then you've got more and more people who are interested in off-grid storage solutions. You've got a lot more interest in these rack-mounted batteries, typically 48-volt batteries that have handles, and they're designed to fit into a physical rack. And they might have, like I said, 5 kilowatt hours of energy in them, give or take. And some of them are UL listed, and some of them just catch on fire randomly. So, buyer beware. But those are becoming a lot more popular. There's a lot more interest in that. And yeah, most of those are made in China. And then I've also seen increased interest in things like Stirling engines and sand batteries and, you know, heat-based power generation, parabolic mirrors. All that gets ridiculously complex and stupidly expensive and everything breaks. So I'm not recommending that. But there's a lot more interest in it because people are realizing that the Strait of Hormuz approach to energy is not reliable. That's just not going to fly. So what should you be doing in all of this? Well, number one, just start learning the language of off-grid power if you don't already know about it. If you're not using any solar at all, you can start with something small like our friends, our sponsors at the satellite phone store. You know, they've got their solar generators and they'll sell you solar panels too. You throw up like a 400 watt solar panel, plug it into your solar generator, and boom, you know, you're charging things. And, you know, you're storing energy and then you can charge your mobile devices, things like that. Their website is sat123.com. You know, same as the satellite phone store, but they also sell solar generators. Or you can go bigger on this and you can start sizing a solar installation. My only warning about that, because I've done this before in the past at my offices, there are a lot of companies that will be happy to install a solar system for you. And after they install it, you will never be able to reach them again. Because they don't make money maintaining systems. They don't make money troubleshooting systems or supporting systems. They make money installing systems. And they aren't interested in coming back and solving a problem and keeping your system running. So, at least this has been my experience. So, if you install a solar system, you should know that you're on your own at that point. You're on your own. So you better know how everything works, what it is, and sadly, there's a bunch of these inverters out there where they don't let you access the configuration unless you're a certified installer and you have to type in a special code. Like Sunny Boy is a brand, I think, that does that. It's just absolutely infuriating. Don't buy any brand that doesn't let you configure it, you know, because you're never going to be able to get the installer back. They're too busy making more money setting up solar panels for schools and government projects. And if you want some free resources on how to do this, just go to my book platform website, books.brightlearn.ai, and search for the word solar. You can download all kinds of free books. There's over 50,000 books there. They're all free. You can download all these books that will teach you how to set up solar systems and how to run batteries and how to do all that stuff. So check it out there. You can also follow my work at brightvideos.com and my articles at naturalnews.com. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for listening. Get ready for the end of affordable energy. That's where this is going. All right, take care.
Stock up on Health Ranger's nascent iodine. Highly bioavailable, shelf-stable, non-GMO, and lab-tested for purity. A bug-out bag essential. Only at healthrangerstore.com.